it. Chris is going to walk us through it, and we might just want to agree on how we go about this draft, section by section, making comments on that. That when we have passed a particular section, we are done with it. So you walk us through the facts section, then we look at it, we discuss, we finish, we move, just like that. Okay, this is good.
The document is ready. It captures some of the issues, or the issues that were the discussions that were that came out of last week's meetings. And the idea is to just really place it before the committee so that it can consider what its findings and recommendations are. So really, it's a starting point of discussion. There's a lot of information at the beginning around the background and explaining that this report is part of the annual report and the BRRR process. And then just to clarify, where I put things in grey shading, that's really my comment. So it's my view, so it's not necessarily something that came out of the committee. And I just wanted to say that perhaps maybe in our report we need to reflect that this is the first year that we are doing this BRRR process, and that it's in a sense it's the first step, and that possibly a way forward would be then to look at how we interrogate our quarterly reports. And I guess some information around the budgets for 209, 210, and then 210-11. This is just really background information. But I wanted to draw attention to the violence that happened in 2009 and 10. And that was really that funds were shifted from administration and from state legal services to reprioritized into court services and also Program 5. And really, also amount of around $46 million was taken from the NPA. And if you look at the economic classification of the violence, it's taken largely from compensation of employees and goods and services. So that's just a trend that we need to look at.
Are we in Facebook?
Yeah.
Looking at violence.
These are just preliminary sort of background notes explaining the nature of the paper. Then I note, that the spending pressures or challenges over the medium term that the department can address are the need for additional accommodation, technical personnel adjustments, compensation of employees. Much of the IT equipment is aging and will need to replace. The implementation costs of new and proposed legislation, security and risk management, the review of the criminal justice system, and increased proximity of court services to all, especially in townships and rural areas. So it's an access issue. And then they list a whole lot of other pressures. I felt that there were a lot of technical shortcomings in the report, and I think that perhaps we might want to reflect that in our findings and make some recommendations around that. That it wasn't easy to match the department's actual performance against the strategic planning framework. I mean, they're in two different places. And for example, the time frames are not given in the annual report, so it's very hard to actually know whether they've met their targets or not. And then, while in some instances explanations were given for why targets were not met, it's not done in all cases, the statistics relating to core performance are scattered throughout the report, so it's really hard. I mean, you have to flip from one place to another to actually find out whether... statistics are scattered throughout the report, which makes it really hard to analyze core performance. and there's little consistency in the manner in which data is reported from one year to another, so that raises issues of data integrity. And also the manner in which key policies are reported on either systematic or complete. For example, the department lists a number of activities that are aimed at improving access to justice, especially for those living in rural areas and townships. But for me, the listing of new courts doesn't really actually tell us how this is improving access to justice. Similarly, statistics are given regarding domestic violence, but these tell us nothing about how the rights of vulnerable persons have been protected and promoted. I started off with looking at the Department of Justice, although we saw them on the second day. We actually started with the Legal Aid Board. And here, the key findings, the key issues were really around the fact that it received a qualified audit opinion. And what I found at the starting with, well, not starting with, it's sort of expected, but the department expects a qualified audit in 2010-11. Then on the issue of third-party funds, I'm on page 5 now. The department has entered, or has been, for a number of years, spoken about this public-private partnership. And then it emerged in the presentation last week that the project has basically been mothballed. The department reported that it is looking at procuring a more modest option and also increasing internal capacity. And I think for me, the problem there, well, my concern was that, that without the proper management of third-party funds, the department will continue to receive a qualified audit opinion. And for me, it was unclear whether the sole reason for delaying or for not finalizing the CPP initiative was whether was it affordability or whether, in fact, the department had a better option or an equivalent option in mind. And then the issue of building internal capacity, considering its capacity issues, I had a question mark about that. Then around...
process, when do we get to make input? Do we wait for Christine first and the whole report, or do we go section by section?
My sense was that we should do it section by section. In other words, as she goes through with the issues, for instance, the two main things that have come up at the moment. Question of violence. Mm-hmm. Nah, that was the first issue. We note that, and then the next one is technical shortcomings. It's the major big issue that has been highlighted. So we can discuss those two now.
Can I raise them?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
All right.
Let's start with violence. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, on page 3, look, there's not, I think violence is relatively straightforward, but on page 3, my mic is also, I don't know. On page 3, the second paragraph, this issue of the non-receipt of claims for leases and municipal charges from public works. Basically, I think we need to say a little bit more, because in the presentation, they basically said, I mean, firstly, municipalities are complaining generally about national government or government departments not paying their municipal accounts. Justice, all the buildings are done by public works or are organized by public works. And they said, if I remember correctly, that the last year they didn't have any, when they finally got all the accounts, they didn't have any money to pay them. And then this year now they're waiting for them. And I just think we should be raising a question, a concern about this, because I don't think it does anyone any good. And whether, in fact, to raise that, I think the issue of the public works administration of the court buildings and the justice offices needs to be relooked at. Because the problem, you go to a court, if there's a problem with maintenance, it's the easiest thing in the world, blame public works. and it's not, sometimes not their fault. And in fact, as I said, they had told us that the previous financial year they were late in paying the claims because they didn't have money at that point. So I don't know how many municipalities got affected by that. But so really what I'm just saying is then I think if we can expand not so much the unfunded vacancies, but the problem with the unfunded vacancies is that, I mean, I know Christine's going to go into staff later, so maybe I'll leave it for that, but it's a problem of they've got a high vacancy rate, which I think is problematic, and I'll come back to that. Then they're taking money from the vacancies to pay for other programs, but yet they've still got unfunded vacancies. So the whole staffing thing, I mean, maybe we can look at the staffing thing when we get onto that section that Christine has done, but I think for the moment, I don't think you've covered it elsewhere, that the public works issue, that we raise it as a concern that needs to be looked at.
Can we agree on settling the public works? Do you agree with the principle? Let me put it this way before we go to other. That is, it is better to have a department responsible for its own sense, so for accountability purposes. If we establish that principle to say, we don't want justice to say, when we press them on certain things, then they say, it's not our responsibility, it's public work. Now, we would want to make a very clear recommendation to say, let justice and constitutional affairs be responsible for its own accounting on the facilities that provide access to justice. If we could lay that principle and agree on it, that because that would affect the acquisition, maintenance, and the rest of that. Let's start here. He's vigorously. Otherwise, they mustn't receive money for this, what you call, this process.
this money must go straight to public works. You can't accept money and not accept responsibility. And I think that's the principle. That's why I'm supporting what the chairperson has just said now. The second issue, what makes me happy laugh is that when JJ looked at the environment, there's no environment, a simple part. When he makes his comment, you can see his concerns are environment. Because environment is not just a simple issue. It's a serious policy matter. Two, one, environment has got an element of percentage. It would be nice for you to calculate to us if they are within those required percentages. Two, if in terms of our policy emphasis as government, that these environments really are sensitive to our policy emphasis. For instance, Honorable Jeffrey says, you take so much money from administration, which is supposed to pay people, and yes, you are worried about vacancies and so on. The department, again, has a responsibility. The primary responsibility of the department is to have a plan to appoint people and put them where they are supposed to do. Because if senior managers are not employed in a manner consistent and timeous way, what it means, this department does not put itself on time in a position to manage resources appropriately. And then that's why they are qualified, what to call audit, to me, is not justified. If they don't take seriously the issue of appointing senior, what to call, staff, then how do they expect anyone to understand why should they continue to have a what to call qualified audit? So in the area of environment, that is a very, very serious issue. Now, the other issue is, if you look at your analysis of the technical shortcomings, you are raising very, very important issues. You are saying it is not easy to match the department's actual performance against the KPI in its strategic framework. That's a serious statement. The strategic framework lists the strategic objectives, deliverables, key performance indicators, timeframes, and reporting practices, whatever. So, but the description of performance contained in the annual option does not match the corresponding KPI, or is too vague to be able to say with any certainty that the indicator has been met. Nor are timeframes given in the annual report, making it difficult to evaluate whether performance is on track. The question now that arises, when they say they have got spending pressures, that's the challenge. Because if you say to a person you've got spending pressures, you must say to us, this is what you had hoped to achieve within a certain period. And then you have been trying to achieve, and then because you've been trying to achieve, the problem is finances. If there's no clarity at the technical section, how do you reach a conclusion that you are running short of what to call money? I'm saying this because, not to belabor this point, Chairperson will remember, there's a time when we got a report from the department on the World Cup. There was this money which was supposed to be spent. The department budgeted $45 million for that project. But because of the astute manner in which people implemented their what to call their project, only about $5 million was what to call was spent. That says a lot about the planning capacity of the what to call of the department. That example alone says that we need to call the department to take the issue of planning very seriously. Because if they don't take that issue seriously, they lack credible basis to tell us whether they are running short of money or not. That's a principle I wanted to on that. So far, I want to leave it at that point.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on the environment issue, I mean, I agree it is important. On the environment issue, I agree that it is important. I mean, how can you say you have got all these vacancies and then you go environment money away from staff compensation? It's just crazy. It's plain stupid. And I don't believe that there aren't people to fill those vacancies. I just don't buy it. Secondly, what also we need to emphasize that is not in here is the fact that the requirement couldn't in fact tell us how much they're owing us. And that is even more concerning to me. We asked them specifically, I think JoJo asked them specifically, can you tell us how much money the department owes municipalities? And she said, we can't actually do that because Public Works was dealing with it before a certain time and whatever, and they can't give it to her. And I mean, that for me is a matter of huge concern, that we don't even know what we owe them to. The other other thing is the technical shortcomings, as I mentioned, made of the chaotic state of the figures in many of the tables. You know, several of the tables, the figures didn't even add up. It was just really, really short. And then it does also cast doubt on the actual statistics. How much reliance can we have on the statistics in general when they can't even accurate, and never mind contradicting each other. There was a case of the maintenance applications where the figure that they gave in the introduction was different to the figure they gave in the table. So that for me is a huge concern. And then also your issue of vulnerable persons. There again, they give the figures that they think we should see, not the figures that we actually want to see. And they didn't give the figures. I did my own calculations on the maintenance applications, and 67% of the applications, no order was made whatsoever. And they didn't reflect that either. So I think that will also be added in the future. On the issue of your, who should deal with the maintenance and so on, I'm not entirely convinced that the solution is. I do agree that the money should be where the responsibility is. But in the police department, they have done something similar. They started to devolve certain responsibilities to the police, and in public works, they've got certain other responsibilities. But it's not really working that well either, because the police don't have the capacity within their organization to deal with it. Now, the question is, you know, is it going to solve the problem? I'm not convinced that it is. And if we have a public works department, then maybe they should be the ones to be held responsible and we can hold them accountable. But then, yeah, they must have the money, but they must take the full responsibility. So I think either that must happen, or we must evolve everything to justice with the money to go with it. But then what's the point of having a public works department? I don't think it's just as simple as saying it must all come to the Justice Department, because they can't even cope with what they've got to do. How are they going to also cope with property money? So that's just a concern.
Yeah, I think there are issues who are agreed. Let's just debate them after. The last point. This money going to what the just implications and how practical and so on. Let's debate that.
Thank you. I think we should clarify that point. I repeat, if we give money to you, you proposed that money, that you need resources to do a bridge. Let me use a bridge as an example. You need a bridge, we give the money directly to you, we go to National Assembly, it is adopted and endorsed, it's in your hands. One. The presupposition is that when you made the proposal to get this money, you had a clear plan on how to implement it. There's a basis why you think you need that money. You've analyzed the situation. Two, you accept the responsibility for the expenditure of that money timelessly. Because if we can get involved on issues of your methods that you use to spend the money, one day you will come back here and say the CFO is the one who was supposed to have attended to this matter, and the CFO failed. To me, there's no difference. In this instance, it might look very ridiculous. There's no difference between the public works in this instance and a particular unit in your department and particular activities that you are engaging in to spend the money. Public works, so the point I'm trying to stress is that if there was a problem to a person to spend this money, the department must have seen it in advance. The department must have actually rang the alarm bells on time. The department has got a duty. If it asks public works to spend on a bridge, it's got the money. It must know timelessly that the plan to spend that money by public works is in place. It must on a regular basis interact with public works. It must know timelessly whether the public works is going to put that bridge in place or not. And if there are problems, the department can come to the portfolio committee and say, 20 rand that was meant to be spent by public works, it doesn't seem public works is going to spend that money. What do we do? We can't sit here after that year has gone and be told that public works. So I want to insist, Chairperson, that those who accept the budget, who apply for it and accept it, should take primary responsibility. If there are problems with regard to their tools, they must ring the bell on time.
I was wanting to suggest as a solution that I don't think we have enough information to make a decision either way, that yes, justice must take over, because I think the point that Debbie raises about capacity, will they have the capacity? Well, I think we know the answer, they won't. Okay, is an important one. I would want to suggest that the, and then also just to clarify, I mean, the point that Debbie makes around them not being able to say how much they owe municipalities, it's not actually their fault, it's Public Works' fault, because they're waiting for the information from Public Works. The point I wanted to make is I think the solution would be sufficient for us just to say, we are concerned about this, it needs to be looked at. But I don't think we should make a ruling that they must take over, because we don't know. Okay, I'm not sure if that's not what Bondi was saying.
He's not proposing.
Okay.
Propose.
Yeah.
But his proposal is more or less along the
okay.
So I think we are basically at idem.
Right. Just on Public Works, though, I mean, not for the report, but it does link in with what Christine had raised in the court buildings. I think it would be useful, whether we do it as a study trip or whether we do it as individual MPs in our constituencies, to where there are new buildings, to go and look at them. Because I remember, I mean, the problem with Public Works is that they're not really aware of other people or departments. So on a minor issue, I mean, my office is in Tainace. They have branded the presidency with a corporate brand. That means I cannot get a bookcase. You know, just nobody bothers to ask me what you need in your office. My books, my files have to go into cupboards because it's not part of the corporate branding. Went to a court on one study trip a while ago, you know, and the magistrate was complaining that they hadn't put in a kitchen. They used to have a kitchen, then they renovated the place, and bye-bye the kitchen. And nobody bothered to ask the people who live there, who work there, what do you want? So I think those would be things, too, because that's what Public Works, unfortunately, do. They don't go to the occupants of a building to say, okay, this is the design, what you need. It is Justice puts in, we want the court renovated, we want a new court building, Public Works does it for them, and then the magistrates, the prosecutors, whatever, discover to their horror that it's unworkable. So that's not for the report, but it's more just something, I think, to highlight that we do need, I think, as part of oversight, to look at what is happening with the building, how is it going, and is there a process of consulting the people who work there? Because I don't think, I suspect there isn't, but that's not for the report. So I don't know if I can go on to okay.
Let me hold the chairperson close. I just want to relate a story quickly. You don't want to speak about your history on these issues. You know, when I was in charge of sport in Gauteng, we asked the cabinet to give us money for sport infrastructure. It gave us our Department of Sports. But we were not implementing those projects. Municipalities was implementing them. But the responsibility, not the exact implement, the responsibility whether those projects are implemented or not, was our responsibility as a Department of Sport. Because we had a duty to make sure that if local government is implementing A, it was our duty to make sure that when we say for this cabinet, give us 40 million, we're going to use municipality. The cabinet had a right to assume that what we are saying is correct, they can depend on it. That's why they were giving us the money. So it's not about take it, but they accept responsibility for the failure. Because we do not know anything that we're supposed to be aware of which could have led to this failure to implement. So that's the point I'm saying. And I think to me, this is very, very important. We are not a committee here to oversight Public Works. We are a committee to oversight the department based on the resources allocated to it. And it must accept, this is accountability more than the exact implementer that I was talking about. They must accept that.
Another point, can we just make a formal proposal perhaps that the issue be seriously investigated in the coming year, whether the actual responsibility for doing the work should be devolved to the department or should stay with Public Works, and maybe ask for some kind of a report back as to what liaison there has been with Public Works in connection with the implementation of the Justice Project.
Moving on, if it's the statistics issue, I mean, Debbie's already from page 4, the last three bullets. Page 4, the last three bullets of the blocked bit. Debbie's already started it. I don't think what Christina's got here is wrong. I just think it maybe could be put slightly stronger. Christine's limiting it to statistics relating to court performance. It may be, I think, a bit wider than just court performance. And then I think it was also there was the issue of the stats in the Justice annual report and the stats in the MPA report about the same thing, the court cases and things like that. I mean, I just found them very difficult to understand, to follow, to read. So just maybe a stronger rewording of those three bullets. Sorry, two bullets rather. The last one doesn't relate to stencil linking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then on the on page 4 at the bottom, there's a qualified audit. I think that and you finished it, yeah, okay. I think that the point should be made that 20405 was an unqualified audit. So we made reference to the fact that basically they haven't they've had unqualified audits, they've then gone down. And then the issue was under the next, on the next page, the third part, funds. I think the point I would have liked to see made is they did not seem particularly clear. This third party funds has been a qualification for the last 5 years, and they say it's going to continue to be a qualification for this financial year. They won't get an unqualified order because of the third party funds. The committee is not convinced, they would put too nice, but it does not appear as if they know how to deal with it. When they presented their strategic plan, they told us the problem was that we needed to be legislative amendments. Now when they came, they said, no, they don't need legislative amendments anymore, because we've sort of got it here at the bottom, that the third-party fund should be established as a trading entity. So that is, I think, the major concern. We're not convinced, we're not convinced that it's too, that's too much. It's clear.
But they're not taking it seriously.
Well, that they don't know how to deal with it. And that's why it goes on to the preliminary observations and the site where there is a comprehensive briefing. The committee wants the Department of Treasury to come and give us a proper map of how they're going to resolve this thing, because we are effectively hearing different things at different meetings. So that is the one. Then the other point was that we're also not here why in many instances the department has to handle third party funds. Now it basically was maintenance money. I think you mentioned it, and also maybe the prior, that the fathers come and pay maintenance to the court then pays it out to the woman. There's an issue of should that system work. Now, apparently the official said, look, a lot of the women like it because they feel there's some kind of monitoring on the court side if the father doesn't pay. But should that be the system? I mean, shouldn't the father pay to the woman directly? If the mother doesn't get the money, then she goes to court to say that they're not. So it's linked to the whole issue of maintenance, which I think comes later. I don't know if you put it in later, but it does link to third-party funds. And then I think other third-party funds are things like traffic fines. I suppose it's a fine, you've got to pay it, but the point was raised about shouldn't there be a different system, and it doesn't really, maybe we're going too far, but I would have thought when you get a fine, if you pay up front, you should get a substantial discount. Whereas if you wait to court, you'll end up paying more. But at the moment, the fine that you get up front is the same as the fine you'll get in court, and probably you'll get less in court, and you won't have to pay because you'll be dropped off the roll by the state, or you can go and speak to the prosecutor and get the fine half. But there's no incentive to pay the fine up front,
yeah.
And therefore it costs the state a lot of money to process it. That's something I think the Department of Transport needs to look at, but if there's a greater incentive to pay fines up front, then the third-party funding funds issue would be less acute and would be less of a burden on court rolls. Well, I don't know, everybody's giving me, well, perceived to be in faces, and, but,
I think you must ignore her. She will make a comment if she wants to have. to me, I think I share the sentiments by Honorable Chief. I think the first thing is that, again, is the issue of accountability for the department. What the general consistently said,
you can't continue to account for these funds in the manner you are doing. I think that, to me, that's a clear position. All the general says, they can't give a reliable accounting report around this fund as long as the department continues to allow it to be institutional in the manner it is now. What is going to say that several times? Establish this thing as a particular agency and put law. You can't account for it in a manner that is integral with the broader department. Put the law, make it a separate entity, then we can be able to account, to give a reliable audit to the parliament about this issue. But the department, for more than a year, for more than 2 years, continues to do this thing in the manner they have to. You see, to me, what is missing? We don't know at what point the department maybe put up a team to attend to this matter, and a report was given on how they are going to deal with this matter. That alone, where you don't have a clear plan on what they are going to do with this TPF, shows issue of I don't care about this matter, as far as I'm concerned. The fact that they cannot demonstrate a clear plan at any point in time to deal with this, a plan that can be evaluated over time and so that its failures can be checked. The absence of that speaks about lack of commitment to account on this matter. It's a serious issue to me, very, very serious. Now, if you watch television about 4 or 5 weeks ago, that so much money has been lost here. What really upset me, Chairperson, is that whatever the ministry was saying, we're going to catch the thieves, we're going to get that, to me that doesn't impress me. I can tell you why it's not impressing. If there is no work in the department that attempts to create preventive measures from losing this money, whatever you say you are going to catch thieves, the department's primary job is not about catching thieves. It's about making sure the monies of the state go where they are supposed to. You prevent them from getting lost. Because there's no guarantee that when you lose it, that you are going to get it back. If the department doesn't demonstrate commitment to put systems in place for preventing the loss of this money, no matter how many sales they are committed to cash, I don't think they should be taken seriously. So the political accountability is a serious issue. Therefore, in line with what JJ has said, I would request within a week or two that on this matter only, either the department should come and appear before the political committee. Let's have discussions, let's have clear plans with the department, and there must be a clear process of accountability on this matter. Because this thing is about, what, 2 billion? It's a huge amount of money. As this committee, we can't pretend that we're not dealing with a huge issue here. So to me, I'm saying political. And then the issue that Honorable JJ speaks about, like options now in terms of whether maintenance must go where, traffic, are different methods of managing. But there's an issue of accountability here, which seems to be conspicuously absent. And I think that matter must be attended to as a matter of urgency.
Thank you. I didn't follow you correctly. Your argument is that maybe they should be discouraged from accepting third party funds, or are we saying all they need is to have proper accounting resources? The reason I'm asking, I'm just thinking of other types of monies that the Metis Court handles on behalf of other parties. For example, I'm assisting as a commissioner in a small claims court. The plaintiffs pay to the clerk of the court before a summons is issued, and then so that when the sheriff brings back the return of service, the money is there at the clerk of the court. And also, when judgment is granted, before the sheriff is sent out to go and attach, the plaintiff must ensure that the money is in the hands of the court.
Okay, can I just respond on that?
No, I just, I think that we need both. We need a new proper system, and we need to look at preventive measures. And I agree with that suggestion. I think what they said was it's been a historical situation where people didn't used to have bank accounts, and they felt that was part of the reason, and the other part was that they felt safer to rather let the individuals get the money themselves, because it then minimizes potential for abuse. The other thing that we can consider, I don't know if our place even consider in this particular instance, but I mean things like fines and stuff, you can even pay on the internet. I mean, we've got the City of Cape Town now, we can pay traffic fines on the internet. You can, it's linked to your bank account and you can just do it. So there's no cash going around, which also minimizes some of the corruption, and it's easier to oversee the bank account. So I think that might also be another option, but I do support the idea. I think we should say they must definitely come to us with the plan, and they've got to come to us with their maintenance plan too within a certain time, which I think we're getting to still. Okay. And that they must look at alternative options of minimizing the amount of money that comes into the department by using creative ways of getting people to pay and trying to minimize as far as possible money that has to be paid into the department. I fully agree with that.
Yeah, look, I think Debbie's covered me. I think it's short-term and long-term. Within the existing rules, they've got to, without changing the existing rules or procedures, how they work, they've got to work out a system for the proper administration of the third-party funds, which will ensure that they don't get a qualified audit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that they are not sure about that, because they come and tell us different things. So beginning of the year, it was legislation. Now it's this trading entity, and that's the one where we're making the where we're saying we want them to come back with Treasury to come and explain their action plan to get out of to get an unqualified audit for third party funds within the existing systems that are used. Then the longer term one would be a recommendation to review the whole process of third party funds and our unnecessary third-party funds, or funds, third-party funds which could be paid directly, could we not reduce the number of third-party funds? But that's a longer-term thing. But existing arrangement, and then work out how to deal with the existing arrangements, then look at a review of the whole issue of third-party funds.
Chair, having listened very carefully, I think I would agree with the Honourable Mondri that we need to call the department to come and account us face to face. I'm saying this because I also serve in the SQUAC, Joint Standing Committee on the Auditor General. When we experience such problems, we invite the particular department to come and explain to us. Thanks.
So what do we put in the report? Because we're drafting a report, by the way.
And that's consistent with what POP is saying.
Yeah.
It's saying they must, on the first thing of how they get out of this problem, they must. We want them to come and account with Treasury.
And give us a plan as to how they're going to do them on the
journey. I think we. I hope I'm not repeating you. Sometimes English is my 70th or 100th year language. You see, I'm saying. I'm saying they must, to me, one, we are not satisfied generally with the way this is, as a matter of principle. And two, they must give us the historic background why they have not been able to deal with this matter. Three, they must tell us what are they doing and what they are intending to do. To me, I think we need explanation in that historic background why have they not been able to deal with this matter. In writing, what are they doing, what they intend to do, and let's engage with that. And then at the end of that, maybe we'll actually find a way forward.
That was really
good. You must be in the other 69 languages.
Okay, all right. Then that's the third party issue. We pass it on that note. And then we'll go back to Chris. I think we have covered the issues. We have highlighted this one.
The
three
key ones. Yeah. Page 5. The department expects qualified. It also admits that it faces challenges in sustaining progress made, as there is high staff turnover, a lack of competencies and skills, insufficient financial management capabilities, inconsistent structure and reporting lines. The widely if you look at all these elements, these things are in the purview. That's page 5. If you look at all the issues they are raising here as underlying issues for their inability to obtain
an unqualified audit. This is in the purview. This is their own protocol purview. It's not somebody else's responsibility to sort out.
What they're doing.
Yes. I mean, I find it as grossly irresponsible that they actually say something like this. Because they are supposed to stop these things from happening.
They are characterizing your problem, but they're not telling us what they are to do to solve it.
On that skill thing, I mean, I specifically said to them, how can you say in your own annual report that you don't have, I mean, the most basic things like they can't even file documents for the HR department. I mean, they put that in their own report. I asked them, how does this happen that you employ people who don't even know how to do the most basic things like that? And they didn't even answer that. So they clearly are employing people who are not able to do what needs to be done. And I think we need to also highlight that.
Take us on. We might have jumped a bit, and so John, you can cover some of the things we have dealt with, but in summary, for those that we haven't covered, let's move.
Okay, under human resources, I'm really looking at vacancies here, and I think some of the stuff that, look, they have an 11% turnover, vacancy rate, and I think they said that it's reduced slightly in the last year. They have made strides. I think in 2006 or 2007 it was about 25%. So it's been, it has gone down. But then when you look at, they're getting OSC funding, yet if you look at their vacancies in critical occupations, it's legal professional staff with their high vacancy rates. They're continuously expanding their justice services, and they say the services that they need to provide must be by quality skilled people. But they admit that they're appointing people, junior people, into senior posts. So then we're really talking about, well, actually, are these people able to do what they're meant to be doing? And then what really I felt quite interesting is it's not just that there's vacancies in professional staff. There are high vacancies in senior management, 25%. And that really speaks to your operational and your governance issues. So I think flowing from that, And then they also spoke about they have serious accommodation issues which actually prevents them from appointing more staff. And their budget cuts means that they can't actually, they can't provide the accommodation. They also can't provide the goods and services, the IT, for people to do their work. So there's actually almost no point in appointing more staff. And then again, here I mentioned that the problem is that the monies from unfilled vacancies are being used to fund shortfalls elsewhere. And my query then is, is this a way of almost like reserving money to be used elsewhere? Is this a way of kind of like earmarking money? Then they know that they've got this money sitting in the background and they can use it at a later stage. And then to answer your question about the environment, I did a percentage calculation. It's just under 8 for everything. Just under 8, like 7.8 or 7.9. They do comply, yes.
On the vacancies issue, I can't remember this point now, but on operational specific dispensation, were they not saying that some of that wasn't funded and that's where they have to take the money from the vacancies?
They just got another $500 million.
Okay, and that was enough to cover it. Okay, but the one point that Christine hasn't covered is that they told us that they've got a vacancy rate of about 28-29% in the chief financial officer's office. And to my mind, when you've got that high a vacancy rate, no wonder you can't manage your finances properly. Christine, I think, said when she checked the figures that wasn't the case.
But if you look in the annual report, it's not 29%
for finance.
I wasn't sure
under some other category. They didn't answer that question. In fact, you raised the judge.
Yeah, because basically, look, that needs to be something highlighted. It says very clearly, Debbie JB that they had this low vacancy rate in the CFO's high vacancy rate, and yet we can't find it in the annual report. So it maybe links to the statistics problem. We don't know actually what the statistics are. So that's basically one. And then I think the offices thing I thought related more to the NPA. Maybe we should put that under NPA if I'm correct.
No,
I thought it was it both? Okay, or I said it stay there. But that was the issue, that they actually don't have offices to put people in. And then maybe we should make the point, okay, oh yeah, then just one thing on page six. Christine talks about the department reports more citizens, and then in italics, more citizens requiring all sorts of justice-related services. I just ran a bit of a bell because our constitution doesn't really talk about citizens. And when I looked, it didn't refer to citizens. I mean, the report, it just seems to, so just check that up. It just talks about the quality and quantity and quality of the services that are required and expected to take place pressure on the department's human capital management system. Just check on it because, you know, our constitution, who was there? No one. No, you're in the provinces with me, but it doesn't talk about citizens really very much. And the only thing, it's much less limited. Then I just thought maybe we should make a linkage. I know we cover Legal Aid South Africa later, but maybe at this point it would be useful. I mean, they were impressive, and to compare their vacancy rate and their staff retention and the fact that they are evaluating and developing their staff, and that maybe the department could learn a lot from Legal Aid South Africa, because those are effectively lawyers and they seem to be producing better quality legal practitioners than are in private practice now. Legal Aid. So I'm just saying, we cover it later. We've got a section of them, but just for when we talk about the department's human resources, that we make an adverse comparison to LAWSA.
Yeah, that is a side. I almost think we should recommend that Legal Aid takes over running the Justice Department. On the resource, the HR vacancies, the other thing that is highlighted by Christine, which we haven't discussed, and I think we should also take forward with some kind of recommendation, is the high turnover rate. I mean, the 15% turnover rate. Now, why? I think they need to come and explain to us why that is. So, are they doing exit interviews to see why people aren't happy there, and what are they going to do to develop a staff retention strategy?
So, that's going to be my
I assume maybe amongst other reasons that made JJ to speak about comparison, them making comparison with Legal Aid, is responding to quality skills that are required and which take time to develop, and less experienced people are taking up new posts at a higher rate, and that could have an implication for the performance. And I think it's a serious issue, because you see, if you go to CCMA, this is MA in the past 5 or 7 years, I think, or 10. It doesn't matter how qualified you are. There's a 6 month course that their practitioners go through. They don't care whether you were a legal whatever. But if you are going to get into their system, there's a process they put you through in the CCMA. As a result, CCMA enjoys credibility in South Africa across private and public sector. Those are the quality people. The point I'm trying to emphasize here, if you look at the money, it's important to look at the money they spend to do that training as against the money they were going to lose if that training was not done. Then it calls for the department to say, if you were to have something similar to that, how much loss are you going to reduce in the department as against the loss you continue to incur because of employing anybody who happens to have a required certificate. And I think, in support of what JJ has said, this to me is a serious issue. Again, they are complaining about the matter which is within their responsibility. In other words, you've got managers here. We as politicians were not hired based on our qualifications. We were voted to power. They are hired there based on their qualification. Now, they can't be the one who speak here as helpless people in the wilderness.
So in the report, we should be highlighting the issue
of training, the necessity for them to develop a plan. That's what we are raising to answer to.
The retention and training comparison to legal aid, their aid to evaluate and to produce people.
The addition I wanted to just make, I think we can't do this report without mentioning it, concern over the vacancy still at the Chief Master. And I mean, one, there wasn't much one could say with to them in the committee meeting, but I mean, it was raised. But yeah.
Can I just remind myself? This is in the Masters in Corruption. The department gave a whole lot of information and report, and then they sort of highlighted or disputed the allegations contained in the Public Service Commission report. And then there was a lot of confusion on the day about the fidders. I mean, I think we all ended up being rather confused as to what are disciplinary matters and what are financial conduct matters and what the extent of the real problem is. So the recommendation was that they. The other thing I want to highlight is that they used quarterly suspension, all of which exceeded 30 days. Okay, the average number of days spent is actually 203 days, almost 204 days, and the cost is $3.3 million. So it's actually quite high in the way that they are dealing with their disciplinary matters. And that's for all disciplinary matters that they're reporting. Then our preliminary recommendation was that they asked us if they provide a comprehensive report on all the disciplinary matters in writing. And I know that we were satisfied with the stats that were given to us. And that there should be a specific section dealing with all cases of financial misconduct. And then there was the issue around, I think Mr. Landis raised the issue around members of the departmental committee doing business with government. There was a question around that, and the DG undertook to investigate that, although she clarified that nobody on the bid committee does business with the department. And then I just have an analysis, and I think we've touched on it here, is that if you create an environment, I mean, you can deal with corruption and discipline matters by targeting the individual, okay? But if you're creating an environment that breeds corruption, I mean, I kind of feel this with the lack of control and the lack of governance issues, if you are creating an environment that makes it easier for things to go wrong. Oh, then the other thing that was quite interesting, the DG herself was quite concerned that, I don't mention it, that there's so many people who just abscond.
Mm.
They get fired and then they come back and then they keep on appealing their firing, their termination of employment, and the process just goes on and on and on. So, I mean, they clearly can't do that.
We have to observe this continuation by the department to cry and express helplessness about situations that are happening around them. It's a consistent matter which I think must be rejected.
You see, if we look at that, there were 18 precautionary. I'm happy that the way Christine is doing it, she's observing areas of critical importance. There were 18 precautionary suspensions of all which exceeded 30 days. The amount is about 3.3 million. It goes back to a situation where it is becoming chronic that a lot of people are in suspension, and these people are using the state, what we call the state money, and yet not servicing the state. In other words, during that period, that money is being paid for nothing. The challenge we have here, you will discover again, is that because of the bad planning techniques, you don't have performance contracts that can be used to either fire or retain staff. Because if you hire somebody based on a lousy and a flimsy contract, and then when you say that person hasn't performed based on that flimsy contract, you might find that you're in a situation to keep that person in suspension for a long time, because your performance contract documents are not clear of what is non-performance and what is performance. So
So this is one area I thought maybe we need to draw attention to. Because if you don't have that, you can't just wake up in the morning in your gown and you are angry, you say you are firing and suspending this one. Because people know their rights. When you say you are firing me, you have to explain why. If the document on the basis of which was signed me and you is flimsy, I can stay here for 10 years being paid and doing nothing for the state.
Thank you,
Jay.
But we actually should try and find out whether the contracts are in fact and what are the reasons why the suspensions are being carried on endlessly. The other thing I think we should also highlight was the lack of progress in finalizing disciplinary and grievance complaints. There was a lot of outstanding disciplinary matters and grievances that hadn't been dealt with. I mean, that in itself creates an environment of dissatisfaction amongst the staff. If you lodge a grievance and it takes a year or two to finalize, then they sit and fester on it the whole time. And I think we should also highlight that. I mean, it's just a case of total mismanagement, in my view, of the whole department, the whole way through the triple.
On the disciplinary matters, I think, you know, it's more just maybe points of emphasis that we should express concern at the slow pace and I mean, strong concern, stronger than what is here, the slow pace of dealing with matters, because there are more cases coming in than going out. They had said, correct me if I'm wrong, that there were capacity problems in terms of dealing with them. They said two things, as far as I remember. One was that the staff in HR did not have the capacity to deal with these cases. And then two, they complained, this is the department, that the NPA had said to them, don't proceed with the disciplinary case until the criminal case is finished. They did say that because I remember that specifically because, I mean, to me that was a problem. Criminal is, burden of proof is, quantum of proof is guilt beyond reasonable doubt. Disciplinary matter is balance of probabilities. So you can get found not guilty in a criminal case, but you can still be found guilty in a disciplinary case. So I think that there should be quite a stronger point highlighting that this is a matter that really requires greater attention, because how can you have effective officials if they're sitting for a year with grievances or disciplinary cases hanging over their heads? Even if it's a minor case, you're going to be for want of better language, tipped up official and not going to be performing adequately. Point of order, were you ruling that as unparliamentary?
Then on the issue of new courts, maintenance and office accommodation, I think I've touched on the office accommodation, but new courts, really, basically what's happened is that capital works projects have been put on hold, except the Limpopo one is already in the pipeline, and in the annual report they say that the Nelspruit High Court is on the cards, but then we're told that they need money for that, and that court is linked to the transformation initiative and Superior Court bill. So that's my preliminary recommendation, observation, and research. If the new High Court is a priority for both increased access to justice and for transformation. So that was a bit weak, but the other thing I need to point out is that there's lack of funds for maintenance, and so the maintenance thing is just they say it's been incrementally deferred. I'm not too sure exactly what that means, but I have concerns about the state of the buildings over the long term if they're not maintaining.
Look, one of the things we've got to look at is requests for more money, recommendations for more money, and then it goes to the House, and it then goes to the Minister of Finance. And the DG has submitted a document which I think has been circulated, where they particularly, I mean, basically, effectively, maintenance of buildings has stopped. And even with Nelspruit, even though they say that it's in the budget or it's meant to go out to tender, they then said, well, we actually don't have the money. So it's not this financial year. Christine's got that. And then, so I think basically, you know, on this thing that the DG has sent, it deals quite a bit. It's basically more, I suppose, security and things like that. I mean, it's interesting. Well, no, let's come back to this later. Sorry, Chair, let me just do what I said. It's not so much relating to building of the courts. But I think the main problem is that this is where they do need more money.
No, I fully agree with that. And also, yeah, we do need to look at security at courts too. I mean, we've seen so many cases lately where they have been escaped from the courts, from the prisons, attacked, someone who's been attacked in court. And I think they need to do a serious assessment as well about problematic courts that are especially vulnerable to those kind of things. You know, there've been repeated instances of escapes and so on, or attacks. And yes, I agree. I think we do need money. And as you say, they need to, when they make court, consult with the court people who are working there. I mean, I had another incident in the Magistrates Commission where there was a woman who was in a wheelchair. They put in a new lift in the building in the court, and it didn't fit the wheelchair. I mean, how dumb is that? So, yeah, they need to be practical, consult with people who work there, and I agree that they definitely do need money. But I think we need to raise a serious concern that the existing courts are not being maintained properly, even the most simple things. I mean, I've heard that the court cases have even been cancelled or postponed because a light bulb has been stolen from the court or just not replaced. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's the most basic little maintenance issue. So, yeah, I think it's not only money, it's also, yes, again, management issue.
I think one of the members actually hit me in my mouth. The challenge we have here, if you look at what Christine said at the beginning of the technical shortcomings and whatever it is, when there are problems like this, it's difficult to directly link them to the shortage of what you call shortage of money. Thank you. So, yeah,
we highlight management issues.
The other issue that was raised was the tender process. I mean, they said several cases of new buildings were hampered because the contractor who won the tender couldn't do the work properly, and they had to cancel the contract. So they need to be more careful when they're awarding the tender, that it's an established, reputable company.
Yeah, I looked at performance and really.
Sorry, just before that, Christine, you've forgotten IT.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically is an area where they are also asking for more money. I think there's not much that can be said about it.
Mm-hmm. Coordination with other departments.
Mm-hmm.
More money.
Oh, where do we pay that?
Looking at criminal matters, you know, there are several initiatives to improve court performance in the lower courts, but the trend in the past years has, but for me, I find it quite difficult to actually tell whether the trend has been an improvement or, you know, a decline. I sort of think maybe it's just more or less staying on par. Some more recent statistics have shown improvement for some indicators of performance. And then my point is that, you know, issues of data integrity is really difficult to track indicators over time, as there's little consistency in the way stats are reported from one year to the next. And then, you know, then also you have to ask, well, what are appropriate indicators of court performance? And, and then one of the recommendations is, for example, the norm is established with regard to court hours in consultation with with relevant stakeholders. And then, yeah, my comment is that core performance is, may often say that the problem with core performance is the function of the core role, which is not entirely in the hands of the department. Okay. So that's one issue. But then it also depends on the ability of the police, the MPA, and the correctional services to also be present at the same time. So there's a coordination issue there, and that's also need to look at. But then, and I think this is within the governance or the leadership issues, that there's a huge deployment of resources within regions. For example, until recently, prosecutorial officers were entirely absent in North Malanga, and only partly as present in Limpopo. And then suddenly there's a huge deployment of resources between players within the justice system. For example, the MP, there's a high demand for legal aid, yet they don't have the required number of practitioners to court. So those are factors that I felt were
My request is that I think in some areas Christian has done this. For instance, other recommendation where we say the statistics on court performance presented in the annual report are difficult to analyze with inaccuracies. I'm not sure whether you have pointed with specific where that is happening. Because that to me, we must have to be very clinical. If you say inaccuracy, says e.g., in your report, A, B, C, D, so that they must know that we are not just speaking about something that is, because I know you have picked that somewhere, if that we can be consistent in articulating those examples.
No, I actually put a table together looking at the 2 years and also looking at the MPA statistics.
Sure.
And I mean, you get them in one place, but actually there were just question marks everywhere, so it doesn't give a good picture of what's going on.
Well, just on this issue of the norm, I mean, I would be very happy if we could do that, but I don't think that we can make that kind of recommendation, that a norm be established. I mean, I think we must express our concern at the very low number of hours the courts are sitting, absolutely, and that all efforts must be made to establish the courts for that and to come up with solutions, and it will involve a coordinating effort because, you know, sometimes it's the witnesses who don't arrive, sometimes it's the police who don't arrive, and so on, but I think we've got to express our concern that we're sitting for 3 hours a day. That's just not acceptable. And I mean, judgments, as far as I'm concerned, must be done after hours anyway.
Just a second. Where we say recommendations again, I would request that, I think you gave backgrounds. If we can try as we rework to say this is our recommendation, because the background exists somewhere. Is that okay? Yeah. I know you could be a spy. You might not do it if you think it's not helpful.
So I'm just a little bit worried about this section because it's really important, and I'm worried that we, you know, just make it well that the concern that it's a low number of quarter hours, sitting. And what about the other indicators of performance? Do you want to make any comments around that?
Uh-huh.
For example, the cases struck off. Or are we going to cover that elsewhere under the NPA, for example?
What do you make a draft with your goals? So when you finalize the public, at the moment you are talking, this is where you can draft. We are making this into this draft, so it will be much more like a report that you want, but obviously. So, issues like that, if you are not coming to the life of the but can do the meeting. Those are the issues.
My proposal, Christine, is that. And now, in a number of areas, you have spoken about performance information,
mm-hmm.
whether you call it indicators, KPIs, or deliverables. And I think somewhere, the department must be called upon to produce a plan with an intention to sort out their performance information. Because to me, that's a problem across the board. It's a serious matter because if the performance information is improved, interaction between us and the department is improved, and we can easily deal with one another on credibly informed basis. And I think performance information, we can reorder them as there's a serious concern about this performance information. Doesn't matter how, from which direction you look at it. So it must be an independent matter that they must look at it.
Let me just say
Yeah, I thought Christina had, I was going to raise it under the NPA, but I see she's basically put it down here, which I think is correct because it shouldn't be in two places. But maybe the issue of the statistics should actually come in here that you raised earlier. But it's very difficult to gauge what's happening. They give us percentages. Our conviction rate is this, it's gone up by 2%. Looks good.
Yeah.
But then you've got to look at that, what is this percentage of? And what is being withdrawn. Now, in the NPA report, they had quite a high, they had quite a high figure for informal mediation, which basically is, they have withdrawals and struck-offs. And then they have this category which they've created called informal mediation. Does anyone have the page? I can't find it, but basically, look, for those that were there, and the number has grown exponentially from a small number to a very high number. And so I think we need to, what you said in the meeting with them is that, look, you need to tell us what's going on here, and there's no statutory provision for this, which they also said they were a bit worried about, and so we need a closer look at that aspect. Then there was confusion. Now I can't find the section in the document, but it was the NPA report. They had a category, which I know I've complained about before, of removed from the role, struck offs, referred to another court, and mentals. Okay, mentals are basically people they referred to a psychiatric institution, but they're mental. Okay, I mean the terminology. But basically, you know, my problem is that a withdrawal is one thing. A struck-off is bad because it's basically the prosecutor refusing to withdraw, the presiding officer saying out. A referral to another court, there's nothing wrong with it, that case continues to live. So there's lots of referrals from magistrates' courts. And I remember being concerned about the high figure for under that category from the high court because they're not being referred. And then the mentals is also, it's not... object, a factor, nothing to do with the quality of the prosecution. So if there's a suspicion that the accused does not have the legal capacity to stand trial, then he or she must be referred for evaluation. So it's different to a withdrawal or a struck-off. So that needs to be sorted out. And then I think there was, although I made, I don't know who's recording, although I made a joke last, I think the language of the mental is not appropriate. Yes, it's not appropriate anymore.
Yeah, is that what you're basically saying, that we need the reasons why they were removed? Because it seems to me that very often they're just happy to say, well, we've got rid of so many cases, but they don't really care why. And a lot of the time it's because they were just taken off the roll or struck off.
Yeah, I think the point I'm making is the statistics are insufficient for us to properly be able to evaluate. It's no good just giving us a percentage which looks as though there's an improvement without knowing everything else. Then that category of it's impossible from that category that they've got where they lump withdrawals, struck off, referrals and mentals all together. It must be broken down. How many referrals? How many struck offs? How many mentals? Obviously, if you see your struck off, you can then, once you've got that information, you can then start questioning it. So obviously, you would expect the odd struck off, but obviously if your struck offs are very high, then you can start asking why. If your withdrawals are very high, it also means a question of why were these people being charged in the first place, if the matter was not going to proceed.
Okay. Just clarity, then we need to actually ask that they don't only give us percentages, but that they give us the base figures on which they're working out those percentages.
Because percentages are actually very nice figures for them to give us because they look good, but we have no clue what they're based on.
Yeah.
Christian, if you can go to Auditor General's report in page 236. Findings on predetermined objectives. That to me is key. And I'm saying, because this issue of performance information is central to our relationship. So when we deal with it and calling them to clarify how they intend to deal with it, I think if there are treasury requirements on how to deal with it, if we are lucky, Bonani, we need to find a situation where both the department and the treasurer actually help the committee, because we have spoken to them about this matter on several times. The chances are that with the manner in which they manage skills, human skills and other things and whatever you call, we might actually be faced with this thing again next year. So if we say we want to correct decisively, they should report here on this purpose and the independent institution that is prescribing on how this matter should be done should also be here, so that we're able to not only to listen to them, to also listen to the treasurer, what to call department. Because the general is very clear on the situation of this matter in the Indian support.
The next panel of touch with vulnerable groups. Again, the problem of statistics come up. As Debbie picked up, the number of children diverted was not.
Before the text, I think. I think Christine was moving on. Look, they've got dedicated courts, and the figures are going down. So if you look on page 10, Christine's reproduced the set there. It's gone from 50 dedicated courts to 42. Then they are increasing the number of Tutuzela care centres, which are sort of more inclusive, one-stop, all services type of thing. They've got three more. That's gone from 17 to 20. But the issue is the conviction rate in the dedicated courts is higher than in the Tutuzela centres. I mean, it has gone up higher. And I don't know if we resolved it as a committee. I mean, so Debbie and JB, you can just confirm what. But personally, so this may not be, we bring it here. Personally, it would seem to me that you do need dedicated courts. It's doing better. We asked them, why are your conviction rates so much worse for sexual offences than for the others, because the other offences, they're in the 80s. And they did explain, and I think it is correct, that those cases are more difficult. But the reason because they're more difficult is, I think, a motivation for special courts, dedicated courts, because you have got problems of emotional witnesses or complainants and evidence and the way you handle things. It's a much more personal matter than a robbery, a theft, or whatever. So I would want to suggest that we express concern about the decrease in dedicated, while we're happy with the increase by three of Tutuzela care centres, that we're not happy with the decrease in the dedicated courts. And that the reason that the conviction rates are so much lower is a reason why you should have dedicated courts. My assessment, I understand, is that a lot of the magistrates don't like dedicated courts. They want everybody to get a thorough grounding. And I got the sense that the national director of the NPA is going buying that argument now, but that was just there. Then the other thing is if you look at these stats, the processing rate, there's something badly wrong. 43,000 enrolled, 3,000, 2,500, which is 22.3% finalized with a verdict, guilty or not guilty, so that doesn't necessarily mean guilty, and then 12 removed from the roll. That means about half these cases are still sitting there, and these cases have to move faster. The complainants have to get them be able to move on. So I think basically a concern over what is happening with sexual offences.
There's something that is interesting. I don't know whether, Christine, what you observe, what you read from this. It seems as if things that are specially attended to, either on the basis of emergency or to deal with a padlock, they seem to be done well. It's an interesting thing, because you remember World Cup dedicated courts, they did extremely well. If you go to page 9 here, just under criminal matters, that thing that says the last paragraph, there has been a reduction of padlock cases, and it would appear that the padlock courts is a specially dedicated court to backlog. So everything that is done specially to attend something. I'm not sure what I was reading from this. Maybe you read it later.
There's more focus, management focus on it, the supervision. That's what it says.
Yeah.
I think basically that's what it is.
No, I fully support that, 2009 in a number of sexual offence cases outstanding. And we need to know why that is, because one of the reasons, I mean, I got the sense the NPA, as far as I recall, he said he would, the NDPP, he said he would look into that issue of maybe reconsidering the section of the dedicated court. But he did say that the reason why some of the magistrates were not happy was because they didn't always get a flow of cases necessarily in these kind of courts, whereas they did in the commercial courts. But when you look at the number of outstanding cases, I don't see how that can be. I mean, surely, I mean, you can't tell me that all those cases there are not ready. And if they aren't ready, then we need to know why. So I think we should highlight all of those issues.
Well, I'm sure
one of the complaints or concerns by magistrates would be dedicated, of course, could be career. And therefore, when you deploy them, you've got to make sure that you shift them from different courts. Because with this new amendment that we're making, at some point we're going to be appointing judges from straight from magistrate. We interview now no more advocates on it, but we also just practice lawyers. So if you stay in one small field, when we interview you there at the JSC, you find you are confined. Your experience is not overall. So it could be time limit, I mean career limiting. But the question of employment and making sure that even if they serve in this court, they circulate them so that they gain overall experience. And so it's one thing that we need to set up. JJ, I know your mic is on for all the time.
Sorry, I mean, also one other concern is that number of cases. Yeah. 12,700 cases is a huge amount of cases that were just removed. I think we need to know why they were removed. Okay, we're in children. Really there, the issue that came up was that discrepancy around diversion, and the recommendation was that we get a proper briefing from them on the implementation of the Child Justice Act in progress in the second quarter, and also looking at the issue of diversion.
Yeah, just on that, I think, again, they've given us the wrong statistics, and that maybe could fit under the statistics section. My worry for this going in here is that I suppose it can go in, but the Child Justice Act only came into effect in the next financial year, so we maybe need to note that, and maybe we just say the committee will be monitoring that kind of thing.
Sorry, then the next issue was maintenance. I'm sorry, it's very brief. I guess the problem is ongoing. The queue's already long. I remember at the beginning of the year that they were talking about they were trying to reduce the queue, the length of time to 2 hours. The committee was really horrified at that. And then they also mentioned their safety risks to applicants when they collect their payments. Preliminary recommendation that the NPA and department would give to develop a plan to deal with maintenance matters, specifically coordinating the activities of maintenance officials and prosecutors. And there may be a need to consider an amendment streamlining payments to make clear that an order can be made for payment of maintenance money directly to the recipient. And I think Mr. Rubman clarified that it's possible in terms of law, there's nothing stopping that order, but perhaps it needs to be emphasized in the legislation that it can be done. And then again, we have our ongoing concerns around the integrity of the data, that don't make sense. We don't need to make it clear in the legislation, it is clear in the legislation. We just need to make sure that people know what the legislation says. That's training. Then, just sort of floating a little bit, this is around about transformation and representativity, and within the department itself, they have and gender issues, and actually disability issues, which we don't really ever look at, but they just... So it's the bottom of 10. And I haven't mentioned this before, but
the imposed of disabled persons with disabilities never shifts from just over one. It's like the 1.1, 1.2. So we don't see any progress in that. Then with regard to gender, it's in the department, they say they focus on senior management level. I think overall in the department there's slightly more women officials employed than men. But at senior management level, you're looking at excluding judges and magistrates, 40% are women at senior management level. And if you include judges and magistrates, it drops to 30%. Then the committee really asked them about the briefing patterns to women advocates and attorneys, and we were told that there were challenges around that. I mean, there was just the dispute that there are fewer women studying law, and that there are more women leaving the legal profession, and also that there is a problem, and I think and this is quite interesting, there's a problem actually telling client departments or trying to get client departments to brief a particular category, because it's actually within, they are the people who are briefing. So the proposal there is this policy framework that needs to go to the cabinet for approval. That's more or less the observation was that we queried the briefing patterns.
What?
Sorry? Then specific projects, there was a lot of emphasis on the criminal justice review. Prior to this particular new parliament, there was a big review we went to all the provinces and so on, and it's been really quiet since. It was reported on in the annual report, but nothing's in our presentation, so the preliminary recommendation was the department specifically report on progress on the implementation of this review. Similarly with the civil justice review, there is a project that's sort of beginning, and it would be helpful to get a briefing on that. And then also on the implementation of the civil jurisdiction of regional courts.
Mm-hmm.
No. And just to emphasize, we have a lot of emphasis, I think, because of the priority, government priority on crime and stuff, on criminal matters. But the civil work is about access to justice, mm-hmm. and it's master's office and all those kinds of things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the National Prosecuting Authority, just briefly, they received a qualified. Possibly beyond, but we can perhaps leave that one out. Then the issue of leadership is the AD's report specifically mentions leadership as a problem. In the discussion, it appeared in around one that there are challenges to leading or administering a department, the NPA from afar. And for this reason, the CFO and CEO now form part of the department's exco, which meets twice a month. Then again, the vacancies issue, they had to report 16.5% vacancy rate. And then in the AFU and the STCU, it was the point there was not that there are vacancies, but because there's not enough capacity, there's not enough posts in those units. You know, office accommodation was a huge problem that they emphasized. Along performance, the number of cases of fallen is too high. I think we've dealt with a lot around the spring, and then around the growing number of cases that are resolved by informal mediation. The next bullet point should have been the thing around the sexual offences and the dedicated courts. And then the preliminary recommendations were that we queried whether the MPA's efforts to address their audit opinion are comparable to the department despite the considerable work that they did in avoiding a disclaimer. Then we also felt the growth of the cases resolved by means of informal mediation is cause for concern as it's been regulated, and felt that the MPA should look into this. The matter of the declining number of dedicated sexual offences calls for quite further consideration. We've discussed that in quite a lot of detail.
I want to suggest that maybe the other issues relating to vacancies, relating to office accommodation, relating to court performance get dealt with in those sections, so they're not repeated here. And then the NPA section would really just deal with their accounts, and I think it should be stronger. The section from the Auditor General's report was it's on page 77 of their report, if anybody's got it, but management's philosophy and operating style does not in all instances promote effective control over reporting. This is evidenced by the fact that significant external audit findings from prior years have not been addressed, and scope of resolutions have not been substantially implemented at the time of issuing this report. I think that's quite heavy. And it's basically, for those who were not there during the briefing, the impression I got was that, look, there was still something to engage with the department. They were building on the finances, and you could engage with them and see where the problems were, but with the NPA, there was nothing. Now, the DG is responsible, and she's delegated to the COO. And I think that's to some extent that I would have thought we would need to say that the DG needs to. I mean, she didn't deny, dispute it, she was quite good about it, but the Director General needs to take responsibility for ensuring, personally responsibility for resolving these issues. We didn't have a clear, you know, they were able to say in the department, this is what scope has said we must do, this is what we've done. They haven't done that with the NPA on the same level. So it's those kinds of problems. So I think that the finances thing needs to be stronger. And then I would suggest, we haven't discussed this, but it's a bigger issue that I think Christine sort of hinted at it, that we do raise the question of, should the DG Justice, because they're a separate body, should the DG Justice be responsible for, should she be the accounting officer for the NPA, or should they handle it themselves? And I suggest we raise it as a question. I don't think we can take a position that to say this issue needs to be looked at.
Why, if I heard JJ correctly, that on finance should be stronger, if I heard you. In line with that, you see this point that says the NPA reports that it expects qualification. If you go to the Auditor General's report, that says management philosophy and operation that does not in all instances promote effective control over reporting. This is evidenced by the fact that significant internal audit findings from prior years have not been addressed, and scope of resolution have not been substantially implemented at the time. To me, this is just a sheer state of arrogance and disrespect for government. Simple as that. If now, after so many years, they are still saying, we expect to, without being ashamed, we expect to be qualified, it means this to them doesn't mean anything, what is written by the other general here. And to me, I support that seriousness in that context. In that context, I support that seriousness.
I also think, I mean, I did ask about the restructuring, which has caused so much unhappiness to so many in the department, and I think we should actually ask for formally that they be reported on as well in the report. What is the status of the program, and what are the plans, and how?
put lots of stars around the section in the report. But their challenges are the practitioner for the court ratio and accessibility in rural areas, limited capacity to render civil legal aid services, and difficulties accessing clients for consultations and accommodation shortages resulting in them having to consult in corridors, which shouldn't really be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the preliminary recommendation was that the OC funding is included in the baseline to prevent LASA from having to freeze posts. That their efforts to increase civil work are supported financially. When they make their second quarter report, they give us more information on how the implementation of the Child Justice Act has affected LASA and on their cooperation agency agreements. And then the members of the committee were urged to visit LASA. Either we could, you know, do this sort of coordinated thing or in their own individual capacity. Quickly, with regard to the Human Rights Commission, they received an unqualified audit. They again talk about budget constraints. There's a high turnover of staff because they're unable to pay. They say they're unable to pay competitive salaries. They're unfunded mandate in terms of power. There was an issue about there should be improved reporting of their complaints. And then the perennial problem of the lack of compliance with power by government departments. And then that report actually gives a lot of information about which government departments are repeat offenders and so on. and then our preliminary observations, recommendations that we should hear from the Commission separately on the Section 32 report so we can actually do something about it. Then there's a debate around the Parliament's need to be more supportive of the Commission's work by taking up the findings contained in their report. And as far as and there was an issue about defending attacks on their integrity. And then the matter of actually putting the ASMA report and debating it that was raised, as well as the independent panel report. And then the committee also felt that the Commission needs to do more, also needs to take responsibility about what happens with the report. So when they table it, don't just table it, send it with a letter, outlining what they would like done and what action they would like Parliament to do. And then I haven't captured this here, but there's this new office supporting Chapter 9 institutions, and I'm not terribly clear about what their mandate is. So perhaps at some stage we need to ask them to come and tell us what they do. And then also how we are meant to interact with them, then around the public.
They did talk to us about how they're trying to save costs. So they fly economy. If you look at their report, it's sort of cheap paper, no colour. I mean, which is good. They are trying to cut costs.
Yeah.
And I think they should be commended for that.
With the public protector, they received an unqualified audit. There were some matters of emphasis. And there is a detailed document, and I actually didn't have time to really go through it in a lot of detail, so there may be stuff to think, but really, they need more money for more investigators, they say. They talk about the resource challenges around that. There's more money for the CEO. There's a debate around the post level. And then also they point out their constitutional manager sort of requires that they are accessible. And there was debate around whether they should be opening more offices. And their point was, that they're dealing with people who would prefer to, people in South Africa prefer to actually to deal with each other one-on-one, and that it's an oral tradition and so on. But they are exploring options in this regard. And then they raised the issue about that they have all this legislation that they've got to look at, and it has resource implications. Then preliminary observations were that I think we found the reporting of the case needs to be more qualitative and analytical. are matters where justice has not responded, then the committee should be informed so they can take it up with the department. And there was that whole issue about, you know, Legal Aid South Africa not cooperating, but then when we challenged, or when they were asked about it, they sort of backed down as well. So, then the committee asked that the public protector provide its action plan to address the AG's matters of emphasis.
But you have to claim the post before you find it. Right.
Maybe lumping the two together.
One issue was they both complained about. I think with both of them, it's an issue of cutting the cloth. Cutting the cloth to fit the suit or whatever. I don't know, but it's basically that. There are funding pressures. You obviously can't do as much as you'd like to do, but do what you can, do it properly. The one point with Human Rights Commission was the department is doing some of the promotion of the Constitution, and I think that's an unnecessary overlap which needs to be looked at. The Human Rights Commission should be doing that. Then as far as the one thing they're meant to do is this socioeconomic rights report, which they say they're bringing out at the end of the year, beginning of next year. And they're meant to do that annually. So I think we should say, look, we are disappointed that they haven't brought it out before. And this is a fundamental task. Then on the issue with both them and the public protector of government not responding, I find it a bit problematic. They do report to the National Assembly, but yet they don't really give us much detail about the problems that they are having. They have with the PIA report, and that's, we said they must come back and give us a full briefing. They have with the PIA report given the detail, where you can see that both JB and my current constituency and former constituencies are not responding to PIA requests. I don't know, generally, apart from the Human Rights Commission and the PIA report, but with both the Public Protector and the Human Rights Commission, they are not telling us where they've got problems. So the Public Protector would come and make a general moan. The only specific thing you could pick out, as Christina's raised from her report, was that she feels that the Legal Aid South Africa are not responding. Then you ask her, well, what's give us more detail, because they were here, we could have raised it. And then she sort of backtracks. And I think the point should be made with both of them that the National Assembly, that they report to the National Assembly, not to Parliament, is here to assist them, but it is important that the National Assembly gets briefed in detail of where the problems are, and those can then be looked at by those relevant portfolio committees. But at the moment, I just feel we're getting general moans that don't really go anywhere.
I think both Human Rights and Legal Aid, public protection. I think at face value, capacity, even before you measure, although you would only want to take a decision on the basis of facts and figures, remember we are in the acting of public protector. You look at their structure and the skills required to do that work, and the size and the scope of their work. Up front, you just realize that if you want to make effective use of this body, the upfront, apparent capacity challenge. But I support what MJG said, that we can only act on those things if there is information that is very specific and clear in front of us.
Chairperson, briefly, the OSD did have an initial meeting, and it has now been established in the office of the Deputy Speaker. And then they discussed various issues as to how to sort of either work together or cooperate. The ISOD, the Chapter 9.
Can we spell out this name?
I
so it's called
meeting. They discussed matters of common concern and the like, and they also make some undertakings that from time to time they will be meeting so that they can share experiences as time goes on.
When?
I attended on behalf of the committee.
To me, the question I have about this exercise, what the intentions as they are, why is it done through the office of the speaker, or deputy speaker? What are the implications for a day-to-day work of this committee with those institutions? So if I can get clarity with regard to that, I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm saying the potential blurring of issues. If I can clarify, I don't understand.
We debate the wheel, although you weren't here. It's basically from the ASMAR report that was adopted by the National Assembly in the last parliament. So that was one of the recommendations, and in fact the only recommendation that was sort of implemented immediately. That there should be an AA, no, that there should be a capacity within the Speaker's office. The Speaker then has given that to the Deputy Speaker. To manage and support.
I just wanted to add what I want to support the request from Christine that we have a proper briefing as to what the mandate is and how it's going to be carried out.
Agreed, and then we can engage in that argument.
So I just thought, I know that I think it's my point has been covered.
I don't think
is for, I think everybody has got a copy of that ASMAR report, and then I think that the issue to address it at would be a briefing by this unit in the Deputy Speaker's office, maybe with the Deputy Speaker to explain to us what they do.
The simple question I'm asking is that this is an oversight committee identified to oversight Chapter 9 institutions. Now, you speak about the capacity of the speaker. The question I'm asking is that one of the things I do not know, maybe one should also be guided on that, is ASMA report adopted in the manner it is? If it is adopted in the manner it is, then I would understand what we're talking about. Is there a position on what is adopted from that report? Because when you do a report, you are not making law. You are doing investigations, and you articulate your views, you make your recommendations. There must be a policy stance on what is going to happen with that protocol, with that report. And then it helps clarify the work of the committee in that is. If all those things are catered for, then I will accept those documents.
Aspects were adopted, in particular this one about the institution, maybe
another issue that came from the Office of the Public Protector is the question of the salary of the Deputy Public Protector that needs to be sorted out to look at.
Just confirming that,
the Parliament has to approve it. I think there is a budgetary related issue where we may have to, for her, ask for more money for that. And it was tabled some time ago. So I think we are... Yes. So if we get a ruling, if one of us gets a ruling by the public protector, a hard hitting ruling about something else, then we'll know why.
No, that's right. Then we'll
other issues arising out of this?
That's
we need to make decisions on.
Yeah. Look, it was just basically this document from the DG wanting more money, which I thought we should just look at. She raises, I think it's relatively self-explanatory. She raises the issue of security for the course. Now, I don't know what the chances we are in terms of this budget review process meant to recommend where there's more money. Now, my understanding is there isn't any more money, but I think we should still make recommendations in case there isn't, to stop anyone raiding justice because they think that we haven't asked for more money. And basically, I think what the DG has raised, so I think we should be asking for more money for in general for the Human Rights Commission, in general for the Public Protector, although specifically for the salary increase for the Deputy Public Protector, and then the what's in here. She's basically wanting money for, she hasn't asked for money for building. She's asked, DG, this is this letter which you should have gotten out, yeah. She's asked for $319 million for security for courts and justice offices, and she goes through that, and I think it's relatively self-explanatory. Although I am a bit amused by, in the Joburg High Court, 8 laptops of judges were stolen in a month. I mean, I wish they could look after their, it's a thing if you leave a laptop around, even in Parliament. I mean, it's like saying, let's go for lunch, you leave your laptop here. Of course, the laptop is not going to be back. When it's not going to be there, or you're going to, it's unlikely that the laptop, so you don't, yeah. Anyway, but I do think they do need, the hard drive's getting stolen, I do think for that. Then she wants money for municipal rates and taxes, and that's where I've got a bit of a problem, in that at the hearing they couldn't tell us how much they owed. So this, I think, is a shot in the dark. Then they do raise the issue of additional accommodation, and then it's ICT. And then the last one is capacitating of justices' offices, I think, is also understandable. No, not this one. Then they say it's common practice for a judge to request, before that. In terms of Section 12, a motor vehicle owned by the state may, as such condition as the minister may determine, will the Minister of Transport be made available to the judge in the course of his or her official duties, as well as for his or her private purposes. And then judges request it, and they can choose any vehicle up to the value of $973,000 at this stage. And so they need more money for those vehicles. Now, I don't know why. I mean, the rest of us get car allowances, and it means we look after the cars better. It means that when we have to claim back from tax. I don't know why the judges can't be the same.
Same for what?
Why they can't buy their own car with their car allowance. I mean, I understand it's not statutorily provided for, but if they get a car allowance, why can't they use it? Or maybe it's better to give them a car allowance rather than having the state just providing cars for them. It has caused some grief in I remember one incident a few years ago in KZN where a particular judge didn't get the car he was expecting and then had a fit with the MEC for transport. So maybe that's just something we can look at. I think they've got to be given cars now in terms of the existing statute, but maybe what we should be raising with it would be the Commission for Remuneration of Public Representatives. Shouldn't they judges start buying their own cars be given a car allowance to buy their own cars?
Yeah, madam, we should exactly do exactly what is implement the existing law, but look at we are also appointing new judges, so this thing is legitimate in terms of those who are coming to the system. We've got to give them cases, so I've got to look at that as well.
Also look at the amount as well. I mean, if that's not acceptable, I don't know. If he says not, I don't know if we can change the terms of employment or whatever, whether it constitutes a condition or whatever, whether that is legal. But I mean, $973,000 is a lot of money for a car. Well, I mean, why do they need so much?
My stress when it comes to additional funding is when I don't have any information that is adequately constituting a basis for support. This is their subjective statement. That is written here. The terms you need an independent assessment, an objective assessment of the situation. Because in some areas, there's what we call multidisciplinary responsibilities. If we talk about security, for instance, in this whole security scenario that is articulated here, what is multidisciplinary? What is it that could have actually been serviced in that? I'm just using one example. That could have been serviced from that approach. So the point I'm making is that we don't know that that information. But we're just told about a host of security issues. Who intimidated, theft, and so on, not safe, and so on. In that area alone, you need a multidisciplinary report. And so, therefore, if in that multidisciplinary interaction there can be no solution, it's only money, then the basis will be articulated for that. Now, the point I'm saying is that if the portfolio community supports it, it can, but I must be honest, I'm always uncomfortable to support additional funding when the information is not as adequate as it's supposed to be, especially in a department that works in a manner like this one. But I would respect the decision of the portfolio committee. But I thought, for me, it's important to express this view.
Yes, thanks. I mean, I think there's a fair amount of detail regarding the security issues, and I mean, I think most of us are aware that there are real problems with that. So I would support strongly security requests. I mean, we might need some more information as to exactly what they want it for and which courts for that particular year or something. That's fine. But just on the ICT issue, I think we should really support that too. I mean, I think they're really sitting with a lot of outdated equipment, and a lot of them aren't as accessible to the public and to attorneys and so on because of this IT system. But what I would like to ask as well is, if we are going to support it, that we insist that they have got to coordinate with other departments who need to get that information. I mean, like police and so on. I mean, if they want to do this e-docket system, which has been now about 11 years in the pipeline at least, they need to coordinate that the systems are compatible with police and whichever other correctional services or whoever else is going to be involved in that. Thanks.
I agree with that. I mean, there is CETA, State Information Technology Agency, and I don't know how, but you know, we've had a number of how to put it politely, less successful anyway, I mean, there have been some big problems, and I think it's a problem of non-IT people like me get told something's brilliant by an IT person, and then you think this is great, and then you go for it, and then you find that the whole thing isn't what you thought it was. So I would have thought that the security courts I mean, look, it's difficult. They want 319 million. As Mondi says, we don't know what that means. So I think what we should do is say in our report, we've noted that they want more money for security, and obviously security is a concern, but they must also coordinate with the police, because the police generally provide security. The accommodation issue, we've dealt with, in fact, already. This is the 224 million, the point number three. They don't have money to build or renovate courts. It's a problem. So I think we should agree with that. That's covered. The IT thing, I think, then I agree with what Debbie has said. And then I think the rest I actually don't agree with. I mean, they can go with their normal things. We don't know enough. Municipal rates and taxes, 271 million. They couldn't tell us because they said public works haven't given it. We did cover it. We've touched on it. And then the capacitation of the justice officers, well, that's really an administrative issue. And then the operational shortfalls at court level, that's an operational issue that they must go with. But they haven't motivated for that, 80 million and 27 million. So I would have suggested we particularly support security, accommodation, and IT.
And on the others, we need further information to enable us to do it. But even the ones that we support, I think we should be saying, yes, we are supporting, we want information. Yeah, something like that. So that they then by next week. Well, this is preliminary. when we adopt by next week, somebody needs to communicate to them that we want this information, so that by Tuesday next week, we finalize our thing. I think this covers all of us. Yeah.
No, there's
all these things. So, what's in terms of the recommendations? So, we note these things, and we don't say whether, but there are certain ones that we support, provided we get a proper plan.
As this committee, I always view that what fellow committees are a committee specializing in those respective disciplines. If they say to NA, support additional money for this, please assume that thorough work has been what to call by done by that specific committee.
So just my initial thing in the document is that this is the first step, and I think that we need to look very carefully at we started with the first step of this quarterly reporting. We've had our first quarter reports, and I really think that we need to, at some stage, maybe at the beginning of next year, engage in what we actually ask from the department when they come and report. And this is, it'll become like a building process. So when we have produced our BRRR reports, we have all the information, and we are able to identify where the gaps are. It might take us a while, but
What are the deadlines for us to make changes to the financial? What are the deadlines? I want us to, if we know that, it will help us on how rigorous we must be and what time frame.
Well, I know this report has to be done next, has to be ATC by Tuesday next week.
Maybe a general question would be, are we in line with the, how far are we in line with the BRRR at this stage? So that we can have a sense that if there are gaps, what is it that we should do to close those gaps? The context of the entire BRRR.
Well, I think if you look at, to be honest, there's a lot of confusion as to what exactly is required in terms of the BRRR process. So there is a template. I'm a little bit concerned about the template in terms of there's like a lot of information that, to me, it's just like a lot of information put down, and you know, you're not actually drawing out the trends and things. But I think I think for us, our issues have remained constant. So by picking up our issues and focusing on issues, I think we are meeting what we need to do in terms of the BRRR.
You see, one of the challenges of implementing the BRRR is the capacitation of Parliament. There's supposed to be a budget office with particular skills, so that whatever proposal you make in Parliament has had a technical, what to call, checker. Because this thing is not about changing, giving power all over the place and exercising it willy-nilly. It's about exercising it in a manner that is credible, that can stand the test of time. So it is in that context that one is raising this question. And by my own knowledge, I don't think that office has been protocol has been put in place. Therefore, maybe if we say in line with our responsibilities where we stand, probably online, but I think we must acknowledge that there could be weakness because of ABCD in whatever we seem to be saying. But the problem that you must understand, if we say that the department do ABCD, and the department is told by the parliament to do that, and it is assumed that we have done what we're supposed to do.
I think it might be useful just to put in a paragraph around our methods and saying, look, this is the information you've got. I mean, there's almost in the way that you do that, like these are your recommendations. But these are the limitations. You know, we haven't relied on this kind of information.
No, it's a process. So we're going to meet on Tuesday to adopt the report. Then we have a deadline that is sent to everybody we have a deadline as members to read it, and if we want to comment, we don't have to. Then we must send those comments back to Christine by the particular time, which I would suggest would be probably Monday lunchtime. So she has a chance to look at them and see whether they can be accommodated into the report, and we'll send a new draft which comes out Tuesday morning.
That if I go to, I think I agree with that. If I go to Professor Christine, that you're saying, we will consciously say we have attempted to meet the requirements of the. It will be in our report. We are accept the possible limitations in APC. That is called integrity. Thank you very much.
Thank you.